Hi, everyone. Welcome to Season 2 of Keeping a Notebook, a podcast on writing. I'm Nina LaCour. It feels so good to be back. For those of you listening in real time, I hope you're enjoying the spring. Everywhere I walk, flowers are blooming and people are walking around in the sun. I hope it's the same for you, wherever you are. So I teach this online class called the Slow Novel Lab, and last month, when I opened it up to new participants, I asked the first group of them to answer some questions for me about where they were in their writing lives. As I pored over their answers, I found that nearly every writer who signed up for the class, from beginners to award-winning novelists and everyone in between, had a feeling in common. And that feeling was pressure. One after the next, the emails came through, every one with its own story, and every story colored with the pressure the writer felt. To finish a novel to know they are capable of it, to write a compelling enough or commercial enough story to get an agent or a book deal, to make a sustainable living from writing, to please a publishing team or a readership, or to be as efficient and prolific as the writers who shout their daily word counts out on Twitter and whose novels keep coming out each year or even more often than that. I had planned for our first class meeting to be all about routine and ritual, those comforting, special things we do for ourselves and our creative practices. But routines and rituals can be difficult to maintain if underneath them is a true problem. Not the problem of how the story itself is coming along, but the problem that prohibits us from giving the story the energy and openness it requires. If we come to our work with tremendous pressure on our shoulders, a cup of tea or a candle or a song won't be enough to get us to that place of abandonment and discovery we're all seeking. In the very first episode of this show, I talked about how writing felt to me when I was a teenager. And right now, I'm remembering that when I was in high school, reading short stories by Raymond Carver and Alice Munro and James Baldwin, all about people trying to figure out their circumstances, I would often look out of my living room window to see a man who stood across the street from my apartment building, smoking cigarettes in front of his house. I felt so little pressure back then. So little pressure, in fact, that I moved through my days thinking about that man, wondering about his life, and then writing him into a story that I wrote for the love of it, without any thoughts of publication or money or fame. Miraculously, a man is standing across the street from my house right now, smoking a cigarette and staring at nothing. I've never seen him before. I can see him from my spot at the kitchen table where I'm making this podcast. It's as if he's here to remind me of that feeling, when a spark of inspiration leads only to creation, and the only pressure you feel is to write fast enough so the ideas don't slip away. How can we get back to that place? I ended up thinking about it for days and days, and I came up with some ideas to share with my students. I hope they'll help you, too, if you're feeling the pressure you carry is getting in the way of your creativity. But first, a story. I was 22 when I started grad school and working on a novel I didn't know how to write. It was a multi-generational story set in Los Angeles and New Orleans, loosely inspired by my dad's side of the family. I didn't know how to write a novel. I'd only written short stories, but I read a lot, and I knew the kind of novel that I should write. An ambitious one, a sweeping one, a story that would expose the humanity of an entire family. A story like 100 Years of Solitude, perhaps, or Edward P. Jones's The Known World, which slipped into so many characters' heads and hearts and bowled me over with its complexities. A novel like those, but modern and mostly about young women. I was so nervous about pulling it off correctly that my usual slow pace slowed even further. With every sentence I wrote, I wondered, am I doing this right? Does this sound like a novel? And then it was time for my first graduate workshop. I submitted the pages I'd labored over, full of scenes I was afraid I'd gotten all wrong, and my fears that I was a bad writer, that I did not, in fact, know how to write a novel, were confirmed. My peers laughed at some of my scenes. They said there was no passion in it. My professor drew a line down an entire page and told me it was awful. I'm sure it was. You can't write a good novel without trusting yourself to write it. I put that book aside, and even though I wasn't thinking in these terms, by doing so, I lifted the pressure that had stolen my passion and confidence. I didn't have to write that kind of story, after all. And then I took a young adult literature class and wrote a scene as an assignment. I didn't worry about writing a complete character. I just had to find out if I could write something I truly loved again, if that passion would come back to me. I wrote about two girls ditching school, going to the park to swing. I wrote about the sky breaking and rain pouring down and how they kept swinging anyway. Maybe it was a metaphor for my own perseverance, but I didn't think of that then. All I knew was that writing felt good to me again. This was a story I knew how to tell. I had been trying to write about all of these adult characters and their parents when I was barely an adult myself. It wasn't the right story for me at that time in my life, and once I discovered what the right story was, I didn't look back. The pressure I had put on myself at 22 was to write the novel I felt I was supposed to write, an ultra-literary epic family saga. It was only when I lifted that pressure that I was able to write the story I was ready to, and it turned out to be a quiet one, about a girl grieving, and by surrendering to that story, I found my voice and my career. I don't have control over the stories that I tell. I didn't then, and I still don't now. I tried to write a lighthearted novel once, and it turned out to be about heartbreak. I tried to write a mystery, and it ended up as a love story. At a certain point, you have to relinquish the idea that you have control over your work, because the story will lead in the direction it wants to, and the longer you fight it, the more lost you'll get. Ask yourself, when it comes to your writing, what do you wish you had control over? Your answer to this could be anything: the perfect ideas to finish your novel, finding an agent to represent your work, having a publisher buy your book, gaining a broader readership, or having your books on end-of-year roundups or made into films or hit the New York Times bestsellers list. It would be amazing if we could control all of it, the publishing industry, our own creativity, but in truth, we control very little. It serves us to surrender to it, but first, I believe it also serves us to lay it all out there and take a hard look. I wish I controlled the publishing timelines. There is so much waiting, and patience is not my strong suit. I wish I controlled my own mind, so that when I made time for writing, I would know that the words would come. But I don't, and they don't, and I can surrender to it. List what you wish you could control out for yourself. Take a hard look at all of it, and then surrender to the uncertainty, to what is not yours to decide. Because the next question is, what do you have control over in your writing life? Let's say you have a manuscript you love and you're looking for an agent. You can't make an agent take you on, but you can set up a reasonable submission schedule for yourself. And when you feel overwhelmed by the process and the waiting, you can remind yourself that you are doing your part right now, which is the only part that you can control, the only part that you're responsible for. For me, what I have control over is knowing that just by showing up to write, I am doing the necessary work. Some days I will write a lot and it will feel wonderful, and other days I will stare at my screen and force out some words and hate every moment, and still others I will choose to give up for the day and do something else instead. But by showing up and surrendering to the creative process at the same time, I feel able to trust that the good and the bad days are both necessary parts of writing a novel. Let's return to pressure now. What pressures do you feel when you sit down to write? Ever since I started working on my second novel, I felt the pressure of reader expectation. Back then, I worried that no one would like my second book as much as they liked my first. But my fourth novel, We Are Okay, has reached many more readers than any of my previous books. It even won a big award, something I'll be grateful for forever. And now that familiar pressure has become even greater. I worry that no matter what I write next, readers will be disappointed. But the other side of that question is, if the pressure can't be lifted, how can you reframe it? I have to work all the time to let go of the reader expectation worry. I've actually just started telling myself, they won't like this book as much as my last one, and that's totally okay. I've found it very freeing. We all have favorite books by authors we love. We can't love them all equally. And for those of you who are looking for an agent or hoping for a book deal or trying to find the right idea to pursue, what I'll say is that the best thing we can hope for as writers is to have an enduring career. You want to begin yours with the book you want to write, the story you need to tell, a style that is authentically yours. As long as you keep writing what you love, even if the other parts take time, you'll know that you're making your very best work and nurturing your creativity as you do it. Over the past few years, a few author friends have told me versions of this story. They've said, I thought my career was over, and then I wrote the book I wanted to write, just for me, not dreaming it would even get published. And the book saved my love for writing and has had huge success too. In other words, something wasn't working for them, and then they found a way to lift the pressure, and once the pressure was gone, they found themselves able to write again. I'll conclude this episode with an intention for lightness in our work, a deliberate sloughing off of the pressures that interfere with our writing. I hope that your own versions of the smoking man across the street reappear to you and strike your curiosity and remind you that we're all doing this because, at one point in our lives, we thrived on the simple act of taking an idea and making it a story. Thank you so much for joining me for Keeping a Notebook's second season. By the way, that online class I mentioned, it's open for enrollment now. If you're working on a novel, you might want to check it out. It's a project very close to my heart. You can also get more writing advice from me through my newsletter. I have a new series there where on every first Sunday of the month, I answer a writing question sent in by a student or listener. And I'll be here with new podcast episodes every other Monday. I am so excited about this season, which will include solo episodes like this one, along with lots of special guests. Keeping a Notebook is edited by Sonix Podcasts. My brother, Jules LaCour, made the music. Thanks to my wife, Kristen Strobel, for the artwork, and my friend, Lindsay Moore, for the design. I'll be back in 2 weeks.